Tuesday, October 5th, 1999, the Pittsburgh chapter of the National Council Jewish Women Oral History Project. This is Angela Leibowitz interviewing Mina Kavala. Okay. I think we touched on it a little bit, but I think you may have had with anti-Semitism.
I really have never actually had what you would call anti-Semitism thrown at me. I think I probably had somebody saying, "Oh, you dirty Jew," or something of that nature, walking to school or home from school, but I don't think it was a vivid enough experience for me to really think that I was being prejudiced against, because my high school and my grade school, Frick Elementary and Shenley High School, was such a melting pot. Most of my friends were the few Jews who were at the school, and there weren't a few. That was Oakland, and Oakland had a lot of Jews in those days, but it was a lot of Greek kids. There was the whole area of Greek students who lived at the bottom of McKee Place, and I lived on McKee Place, and all over Oakland there were pockets of Greek Orthodox kids, because the Greek Orthodox Church was right up the street, now on North Dithridge. And they all stayed in their ghetto near where their church was and could walk to their church, as well as the Jews who wanted to be very near Tree of Life, because that was the big synagogue, which has now been replaced by the Playhouse. But most of us were in our own conclave, and we could walk to that place. And most of our friends were of the Yugoslavian background also. That's how I came to be such good friends with Andy Warhol, because he went to school with me and sat behind me in class, and I went to dances with him, went to school dances and so forth. The people from Yugoslavia, mostly the Slavs, were friendly with the Greek kids and the Jewish kids, so we never really had that. It wasn't a big thing with us. They knew that we were off for Jewish holidays, and in those days, school didn't close for those holidays, but we didn't have that. We didn't have anti-Semitism. A big part of my world growing up was also the YM and WHA, and so you were surrounded there by Jewish kids. You didn't really have a lot of non-Jews until they were high school age and started to play basketball in the basketball league, in the courts and so forth. And there, their part of your YM and WHA, which was close to their neighborhood, they didn't want to travel downtown to the YMCA. This was a better league. And so they liked Jews, or at least they said they did. But we never really had that, because we were all interdating. We all went to the high school canteen, which I organized and was the president of. So there really wasn't any of that. We never really thought about, were you dating this guy and he isn't Jewish? Because that wasn't something that was going to be a permanent thing. It didn't matter to our parents then, at least to my parents, it didn't.
Well,
groups that were that were in the Oakland area, whereas you wouldn't have that when you'd moved to Squirrel Hill.
Right.
So we had a couple of friends who came to us through the YM&WHA who went to Alderdice. But our friends were all intermixed. We never really concentrated on Jewish friends. And again, it didn't matter. I never dated a Jewish boy until my senior year in high school, and then I dated Art Lo Patton and Stanley Levine, both football players. Well, all of their friends were football players, and they were black as well as white, and they, so we never had interracial things either. It never was that way. And I think that's probably one of the reasons, because I had so many friends who were black, that I was a board member of NAACP, worked on the education committee very diligently, as I think I told you previously, until Tim Stevens came in and threw off all the whites that were on the board. I worked with Father McLaughlin a great deal, and Reverend Patrick, and Father McLaughlin was white, but he and I both, we were thrown off the board, literally, because Tim Stevens said, I want this, if this is NAACP, it should be all blacks.
What role, if anything?
Oh, I did a great deal in that movement, although I didn't travel to the South, because there was just no way I could do that then. I was, you know, married, and that was not one of the things that I did. But I have always been non-prejudiced, and I believe that stemmed, as I said, from my grade school and high school days, when almost half of my class might have been black coming down from the Hill. And there never was a fear on my part. During all the race riots, I went to my NAACP meetings in the heart of the Hill District, Kirkpatrick Street. You couldn't get it any more black. And there, that kind of trouble never bothered me. I would go to my car in the dark. Most people, most of the people on the board either escorted me or went with me. We'd go to Crawford Street. My husband and I were great jazz lovers. We were up there in the Crawford Grill with Walt Harper and everybody. Buzzy Robinson it was a grade behind me in school, and Bird Brown, and they were still my good friends, remain good friends with me when I went off when I got married.
What years were you at the NAACP?
Well, I probably served from 1953 till he threw us all off, and that was probably close to 1970s. Oh, yes. Yeah. Always went to the Human Rights Dinner, worked actively on the NAACP Human Rights Dinner, and then it just became an odious thing when I knew. I still, my close friends are Eric and Cecile Springer, and Derek and Jewel Bell, and she died, and he's remarried now. He lives in New York, and we still correspond, and he still comes to see me when he comes to Pittsburgh, as well as Eric and Cecile. And he was an executive director of NAACP, so those years I was very active. And then when he went he was a lawyer, and he went, was the first black law professor at Harvard, and then became dean in Oregon, of the law school in Oregon, first black to do so, and left there. So there's just...
Is that Eric Springer you're talking about? Or
Derek Bell.
Derek Bell.
Now, Eric Springer is a very close friend of Derek Bell's, and when Eric came here to be a lawyer in Pittsburgh, and Cecile came with him, Cecile was very active at Carnegie Mellon, and I think she worked for Westinghouse, if I'm not mistaken. Now she has her own consulting business, but I have a few of Derek Bell's books, and Eric and I remained friends because Eric stayed here in Pittsburgh, where Derek went first to Boston, then to New York, then to Portland, then to New York. Mm-hmm. I don't feel, you know, I just don't really have, and I only taught in black schools, so.
What did you think about?
There weren't so many changes. I wish it would have changed more now that they've got that project that's so beautiful, and they've provided housing that you pay good money for up there, and there is a mixture. I don't know how many whites are there, but there are blacks that are of very fine quality. I think that's a very grand thing. I think that part has been good. I think if they knocked the whole hill down and redeveloped it completely and maybe gave people a better place in which to live, and they didn't destroy it as they did the projects up there, maybe we could give them a better life. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it would take. Mm-hmm. I think there's just so much not being married. If you are married, the husband leaving, all the matriarchal influence that are given to children, I don't think they have a chance in hell when they really get started. It's difficult. Sometimes I wonder, how could they come dressed to school even? How did they get the money for this, for just coming to school? Most of them hungry as can be, not really getting adequate breakfast, not getting adequate food. Always women, no men, you know, around to really raise them. And those men that were worthless if they stayed around. So I think it's a rough road to hoe. And I don't know that they're ever going to get out of it if we continue to have them be the underdog constantly. I don't know that they'll ever really make a way. Few will. There'll always be a few, as evidence the fact that many black teachers are there, you know, now, never would have had an education before this. But they work hard to get to where they are, if they are there. Most of these kids that come out of the hill, and Homewood too. It's not, you know, it's not just because it was the hill, but their housing is so substandard. The way they live is just not what we know. Mm-hmm. There's very little culture. There's no matter how much you send a kid to camp for a couple of weeks or a week or something of that nature, they're not going to get the kind of feel. Their parents can't read to them. If they have one parent, that parent is dead tired at the end of a day. Who knows what they're on? And so they don't get the kind of background and upbringing that your children get or that my children got. And I don't know how you can expect much more from kids who really don't. Their grammar is terrible. It might not mean very much to most people, but it's awful to hear kids just not speaking a proper English. I feel very, very strongly for our having programs that will promote them into a better lifestyle. And on the other hand, how can you have that kind of a lifestyle when some of these kids are 12 and 13 and 14 and they're producing a baby and mm-hmm. the grandmother has to take care of them, and then the mother is nowhere to be found, and it's babies raising babies, really, and that's difficult.
Well, on a very different note, I have to ask Paul, since you brought it up.
Oh, Andy. Andy was a character. Andy is a character, and was a character, and always, I mean, showed promise from the very beginning. Mr. Kirkpatrick, who was our art teacher, at Chenley High School saw in him all the greatness that he had. And there was no question but that he was going to be great, but a kook. Mm-hmm. I mean, positively in another world. Nice kid. And I can visualize sitting on his porch steps, because I lived very near to him then in those days. And we didn't date. You know, that wasn't dating. You went to the High Spot Canteen on Friday nights, and we would dance, and he might walk me home. Or we went to movies, and we were very big into bowling in those days. All of our friends bowled. You went, and you don't know really where it is, but on Forbes Street in Oakland, where the bagel, Schwartz's Bagel is, right above that was the Strand Bowling Alleys, because below the Strand Bowling Alleys was the Strand Theater. And most of our friends, if when you were younger, you worked there, and they would let us in. Well, we'd pay 11 cents. That's what it was to go to the movie in those days, 11 cents. And you'd go upstairs after the movie, and you would bowl. And that's what we did Saturday nights. Nobody did anything else but that. So we all had teams. And then you would be with Andy and Art Lopatin and Stan Levine and so forth, Donnie Klein, who lives next door. It was a different world. Donnie and I joke about the fact that we went to Chenley High School, and we moved as far away as we could move from Chenley High School. And where are we? We're back on this Belfield Avenue where Chenley High School is. And it is funny. It is. It's a funny thing.
Now, they don't have an art program, right?
I don't know. I don't know. They're a magnet, Chenley. And the magnet is international studies, I believe they are. So they get a lot of kids from Frick who go right into that magnet from the Frick International Studies program, too. I'm pretty positive. So I'm not sure if they have a full schedule of things and so forth. But they're really into international studies for going overseas, for that kind of thing. Business and international studies. I'm pretty sure that's what Chenley is now. But Andy was a sweet man, but a kook. I mean, he always had this almost albino-like look with the white hair. I mean, that Emma, he got all these wigs since and made himself out to be a freak, but he truly did have that blondish hair that was so white.
In what way was he a kook?
Just the way an artist would be. Just way out. You know, just, he would take my pigtails. I had long hair, long pigtails, and he'd dump them in the inkwell. He and Dean Camaras. Dean Camaras was a Greek friend of mine. I thought, I'm not sure if Dean isn't dead now. I don't think he is alive, but his son, Peter Camaras, does acting, and Dean always liked acting, too. And Peter Guidus was my high school friend. You know, we dated. So Peter owned Guidus's flower shop. His father and mother owned it, and then he took it over. You know, you lose track of where kids were. One of my closest friends was Elaine Palafoudis, and she was Greek. She's moved to Cleveland. We had our 50th reunion. I graduated from Chenley in 1947. So 97, we had our 50th reunion.
What is your recollection about World War II?
Well, I was young in high school then, and I had a boyfriend who did go serve in the war. And so I wrote a lot of letters. And I had a number of friends who were 2 years and a year ahead of me at Chenley who went to the service. And I wrote to them. So I was aware of what an intense thing this was and how it could have destroyed their lives, and then I wouldn't have had these friends any longer. But it didn't. I mean, my whole life was bound up in what was being done to the Jews, and that affected me a great deal more.
About the state of Israel?
Well, at the time, there wasn't, you know, we were almost bereft by the talk of what went on in the concentration camps. And this young man that I was dating, his parents were killed in the concentration camps, and he got over. He was sent over. So that became very real, and I then knew more about it. But I was reading, I don't know if it was Leon Uris's book, but they were two huge volumes. I don't know what I did with them, but I thought I kept them. They were, I would read to my friends long after after I was married, actually. Just listen to what the Germans did. And they would just be amazed. They didn't know that this was going on. They had never been aware of it. And to me, that was a horror that never should have happened and will never, nothing will ever be like that again. You can take East Timor and wherever else you want to take. Nothing could equate what went on in Germany. And that, to me, was central to what was going on in the Second World War. Because no one that I was immediately with was being killed over there. And so it didn't mean that much to me until after,
right.
You know, after the war was over. And I remember rejoicing at the state of Israel. But I was then working at for UJF and raising pennies and 50 cents pieces for what was going on in Israel and why we needed to send money there and so forth. I knew a lot of German refugees who were brought over. And I guess if you don't have those in your community, such as you might not have had, you're young. So you really wouldn't have been affected.
Actually, I grew up.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, you would have.
How large is your community?
Pittsburgh. We had about, I'd say, 45,000 Jews, maybe more. We might have had more, and we've dropped a lot of Jews. And now we seem to have a bigger, because we take the tri-state area, but that's, you know, a fraud. Yes, it really is. You probably thought that, too, but nobody ever said it down at UJF. My husband always used to, he was a big one for demographics, and he hated all these demographic studies that both Betty Jean Goldblum and I worked on because he felt that was really, you know, not statistically correct. And he was an economist and very big with statistics and felt that was a very wrong thing to say. We're really very small. I bet we don't have 40,000 Jews. I think we have more like 30,000.
A big drama. Vietnam War. What was your take on that? And I guess you had children growing up. Your kids were teenagers. Vietnam War.
It was 19.
Early 70s.
1970. Yeah, my kids were young then. There was no fear that my husband was going to be called up for it. He was in the V-12 program, and he was a line officer, communications officer in the V-12 program. He scored the highest score of anyone in the United States on that V-12 test. Wow. And he went to Harvard, MIT, and Cornell for his training and then came back to Pitt to finish his senior year. Mm-hmm. And no, there was not, I wasn't threatened by it. Well, I feel badly for those who ended up, you know, getting their lives lost because of that war.
Were you politically active for or against?
No, not really. Not really. I was just, I guess, too busy raising kids and seeing that they were adequately taken care of, and then going back to teach. Mm-hmm. So,
right, it's really the point.
Right, it was a time when I was home from school. I was home for 12 years, during which time I did all of my work for truly NCJW, Ladies Hospital Aid, and American Jewish Committee. You know, those organizations that were fighting for things right here at home in Pittsburgh. But contributing to UJF, and so therefore, and being actively involved in UJF on the board and so forth, you couldn't help but be involved for Israel's sake. You really didn't care about too much else that was happening anywhere else.
What do you?
Raising two children, I would have to say, are it. I mean, there isn't anything else that occupied my time more keenly and for which I feel the greatest satisfaction, that I raised them to be nice children, and that I might sometimes feel I wish that they would be more involved in the world that I was involved in, organization-wise and so forth, but times are different. And I realize they're most intent on getting their careers together, and that's not uppermost in their mind. Perhaps if they were, if they had more money, they would be more deeply involved, because I believe it takes a lot of money to be that involved. Your big names in a community, I believe, truthfully, not where our organization is concerned, not where NCJW is concerned, that's the nice thing about it, nor where Ladies Hospital Aid is concerned either, except that now I'm of the opinion that we're just becoming passé in that. I wouldn't like to go out, you know, my friends wouldn't like it too much if I really said that. But I was discussing tonight with Sandy the fact that it's sad. We both served on the board, and she still, I think, is on the board. And it hurts a great deal to see our hospital isn't Montefiore Hospital anymore. And what are we fighting for? I mean, what are we raising all this money for and going to bat when UPMC could give the money for that particular project? It's just sad in a way, because we're no longer a Jewish hospital. There's not a need to have the place where... Yes. It is. It's become that way. And I have a feeling that maybe that's the reason people aren't coming out in the droves that they used to come out for. They just had a meeting and there were 80 people at it. They expected 150. But people have other things to do. And they want to do things that really affect a population here. They'll go to Family House and work there because that's something that they want to see done. And they'll go to a project like the juvenile court, where they're working actively there, or another project that we have, you know, domestic abuse. My heavens, that's a world unto itself. And that interested me, and I went in that direction. So sure that that's the kind of thing, just as I had the feeling, and I hope, you know, I don't know that this is going to affect, I didn't rejoin American Jewish Committee. My husband was a past president of American Jewish Committee, and I felt very definitely in those early years when we were fighting hard to have Jews accepted at the Duquesne Club and accepted in other places, Virginia Manor, for instance, to live in Virginia Manor. Well, it's filled with Jews now. So who needs to fight any longer? And here's $100 that I can ill afford to do what? What are we doing? Fighting anti-Semitism? Well, I mean, the kind of anti-Semitism that we fought in those days when my husband was the president, totally different now. So we're sort of batting our heads. What do? They have a human relations dinner and they give an award to a black or a white child who has done a lot in their school. Well, what is that? I mean, for that, you spend a lot of money and, you know, now the meetings are probably very good and they do have a wonderful national office, national convention and so forth. But I'm not sure that that's where your energy should go at this stage in my life.
Right, really.